This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Datuk Dr. Muhammad Daud Bakar is a Malaysian Sharia scholar. He is the chairperson of the Sharia Advisory Council of Bank Negara Malaysia, the Securities Commission and other financial bodies as well. He is also the founder of Amani Advisors, a Sharia advisory company that is based globally. He is on the breakfast grill this morning to speak to us about his newly published book, Sharia Minds in Islamic Finance. Welcome to the show, Datuk.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
If you have any questions for Dr. Daud, you can text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So, Dato, you've been on the show before. Let's have an update of the things that have been happening in the Islamic financial world. I think the biggest question right now is there's a lot of theory in terms of learning Islamic finance. True. But when we practice it in the industry, it's something very different. Now, as a person that is extremely renowned in the Islamic financing world, what brought you to write about this book and what impact do you think this book will bring about?
So I have seen a lot of challenges and perhaps a lot of shortcoming, even from Sharia scholars themselves, not to mention the other stakeholders. So I thought that the time has come for me to put them together in a novel perspective and for me to give my own input so that we can, be courageous enough to put all the issues on the table and not trying to put them under the carpet. So I tackle the issue of regulation you mentioned just now. I mentioned about the issue of lack of knowledge and lack of respect, the ability to connect between other stakeholders that they are talking to with the same frequency. I think the problem in our industry, we tend to talk with different frequencies.
Mm-hmm,
Sharia scholars will be talking their own language and other stakeholders, of course, their own frequency. So this is the first thing I wanted to put on record, that we have to acknowledge the problem first before we can talk about how to solve the problem.
Okay, so Dato, because I was an Islamic finance practitioner myself,
yes,
and we have seen this, I have seen this firsthand. Mm. There is that commercially driven objective by financial institutions.
Yeah.
But this financially driven objective sometimes is not being embraced by the Sharia scholars.
Mm.
I think the question is then, should Sharia scholars be cognizant of the fact that financial institutions are there to make money? Or Sharia scholars are correct in upholding the principles of Sharia and shouldn't make that much compromise along the way?
I think Sharia scholars are human, okay? We have to take note they are not perfect. They have some limitation of knowledge, but you cannot take them for granted. And the problem in the market, which I mentioned in my book, the practitioner themselves started to present something which are not relevant, which make the Sharia thinking algorithm of Sharia scholars rejecting the product.
Yeah,
I have seen many bankers, practitioners, they try to bring something which is outrageous and make the scholars a bit, reluctant to consider. But if they were to put in the right perspective, this is the product and this product is aimed at achieving the following benefit for the society, scholars are able to give more than one solution for them because scholars are very much trained to provide solution. But the moment you are bringing something which is not in their lingo, they cannot understand, they try to push this away.
Okay, so it's basically trying to meet halfway.
Yes.
Going back to the book, I've read a few chapters of the book and I find that quite interesting already.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest quote that I want to use right now is, without the Sharia scholars, there is no Islamic finance.
True.
This is a rather bold statement to make.
Yeah.
Why do you like to argue that without the scholars, there is no Islamic finance?
Because Islamic finance, or finance in general, is about putting the right arrangement to meet the benefit of the stakeholders, so-called the depositor and the bank from that perspective. But what is the most striking point is that how to make this relationship compliant. I don't think the banks, the shareholders and the management are fully trained. And I don't think the public, on the other hand, is fully trained to make sure that they are putting the right structure. So the Sharia scholars, they are coming with their mind, with their 20 years, 30 years experience to put the right structure. Though the structure might not be perfect based on some limitation of Basel III, of some asset liability management, of treasury product, but the scholars working together with the bank can put the right structure. So this is something which was not happening in the past. Scholars in the past perhaps might be teaching in the mosque, might be giving lectures, might be giving a photo, not all of them. They are very much theories. But the scholars nowadays advising the bank, they are not theories anymore. They have to take the liability. When they issue the fatwa, they have to be accountable for their fatwa. So this is something new. Not every scholar, if you like, keen and willing to take this liability. They are the one who make the whole thing work and give the confidence to the public, give the confidence to the, you know, the shareholders, and not to mention the regulators at the end of the day.
I'm speaking to Datuk Daud Bakar, the author of Syariah Minds. He's also the chairman of the Syariah Advisory Council of Bank Negara and SC. Datuk, the biggest conundrum when I was starting to practice like finance is that not many jurisdictions, particularly in the Middle East, like the way Malaysia practice Islamic finance. They claim that Malaysia is not upholding to the right virtues of Islamic finance. As the chairman of the Syariah Advisory Council of Bank Negara Malaysia, has the central bank done anything to actually bridge that gap?
Yeah, I have two comments to make at this stage. I think the comment that you have shared just now, most of them are not coming from the bankers themselves. They are coming from the media. So media has been playing their role to paint our banking in Malaysia with a black paint, if you like, which I have mentioned in my book, a few pages on that, because I was wondering why the media took that initiative when we are different from the rest of the world, that we highlight Malaysia on the map of finance. However, when we are coming with a new product, a very refined product, perhaps the best in the world, not yet attempted in Middle East, no one
is going to highlight that for some reason.
No highlight whatsoever. So this first thing, I call it bad intention by some of the media not to highlight the good thing of Malaysian achievement. So what we have been doing so far is try to converge some of the product that we have seen when we started banking about 3 decades ago. We try to converge our own version to become another version which is globally acceptable. And number two, we are bringing a new interpretation ourselves because we have to lead the way. We have to take the leadership. I think Malaysia has been taking the leadership, but now we have to do more because instead banking is about creativity. It's about ability to put the right mindset and to put the right product to the market. I think Malaysian scholars working together with the other practitioners in Malaysia, I think we should be able to put that structure, and we should be able to defend the fatwa.
Yeah.
I think this is something that the scholars should come out in the market, say this is our fatwa, this is our articulation, this is our argument, and we are confident this is something that can be defended from Shah's perspective.
There is a particular statement that you make in the book on the experience of the Sharia scholars. I'd like to extend this. Do you think there is a space for Malaysian Sharia scholars to be globalized? We know that you have been in the Middle East and based there for a number of years, actually. And now that you've returned, is there a limitation to why other Malaysian scholars are not globalizing themselves and be part of the Sharia board of international banks?
Yeah. Interestingly, the data shows that Malaysian scholars represent about 25% of the total scholars of the world. In fact, followed by the Southeast Asian scholars like Pakistan and India. And the number is becoming lower and lower if you take the Middle East scholars, Middle Eastern scholars. So they don't have many scholars who are involved in this space. Malaysian scholars have the right knowledge of the product. They are bilingual. They know Arabic. Of course, they know English to some extent. So they have the advantage to go out. So this is something that we have all the ingredients, but not many Malaysian scholars are there, out there. I think my comment on this topic is that we have to make ourselves visible. Malaysian scholars, until today, are not able to make themselves visible. How to make yourself visible? You have to be active in presenting papers, in taking part in many global seminars, in Arabic and in English. So you have to be in that forum, not once in 2 years, one in 5 years, every single month, single quarter of the year. So this is something that Malaysian scholars got to do more and more to make sure that people know their expertise and people can invite them to sit on the board. So this is something I would urge my Malaysian, you know, colleagues among scholars to go out and make yourself known through your publication, presentation and engagement with the other great scholars of the world.
Dato, we saw over a growth period of a decade or so where universities as well as institutions, professional institutions being created. In fact, Armani tied up with CIMA, for instance, with the
in London. Yeah.
This is to equip the practitioners of Islamic finance and create some sort of a fraternity. Do you think that Sharia scholars could benefit from having such fraternity where, you know, institutions actually train more Sharia scholars, for instance? Would that help in terms of, you know, exporting Sharia scholars?
I think I would vote for that. We need to train more scholars to create a wider pool of Sharia scholar fraternity, which is at the moment very organic. I think organic is good, but it will take years to have a bigger pool and a more qualified Sharia scholar. So sometimes we have to be a bit drastic. We have to put another level altogether. We need to expedite. I think number one, we have to make the scholars certified. The moment we have the certification of Sharia scholars, we are putting the right syllabus, like CIMA, for example. We have the syllabus, we have the assessment, we have the standard. This will open up the door for each and every scholars, perhaps everyone who is adamant they have the ability to be Sharia scholar to come forward and take the challenge to become Sharia scholars and Sharia advisors. This is missing at the moment.
Yeah.
We have the accountant training and assessment and lawyers for that matter, but not Sharia scholars. I think to become Sharia professional, you cannot run away from a standard. You cannot run away from a kind of assessment. So this is something that can move away from very organic way of development. We expect themselves to become a scholar and for them to take book, read some book and try to try their luck. But this shouldn't be the way forward. I would urge the stakeholders in Malaysia to focus on creating perhaps the first Sharia advisory certified program.
For Sharia scholars?
For Sharia scholars.
Yeah.
And they should be coming back to the industry every year, every month, to maintain what they call the CPE.
Yeah, the professional grade.
Professional grade for them to become relevant and fashionable. Because some scholars, in their discussion, which I mentioned in my book, when they come to the meeting, they have quoted the argument that they have been quoting 20 years ago, which is not relevant anymore. So they have to be updated and they have to update themselves and how to ensure that they are relevant, they are very much trendy in their own time, new challenges, new hindrances for them to know the new knowledge and for them to be updated from time to time.
Dato, during my professional career as an Islamic financier, much of my colleagues are non-Muslim. They are lawyers doing, say, suku. They are accountants. They're structuring corporate deal, Islamic corporate deal. Is there a space where a Sharia scholar can be a non-Muslim? Is there room for that?
At the moment, there's no room for that because Sharia scholar who is going to put the signature, the fatwa, should be a Muslim. Because a fatwa is about telling the view and the opinion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So you are narrating the view of Allah, which is the Almighty. So for you to do that, you have to be a Muslim because you are putting the view as you understand it, the view that represent the view of the divine, which is Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So the non-Muslim cannot be a Sharia advisor, but they can be Sharia professional. They can be Sharia lawyer, they can be Sharia auditor and what have you. Except one to put their signature that this product is halal, is approved, and we are putting the fatwa on behalf of Allah. Fatwa is talking about on behalf of Allah. In Arabic, it is called al-muwaqqa'in, the signatories of Allah. So the fatwa represent those who are able to put his signature on behalf of Allah, the Almighty.
Is there room for female Sharia scholars then?
Very much. In fact, I was the one who brought the first female scholars in Malaysia, what, 7-8 years ago. And I was in Karachi last 2 weeks and at the Central Bank and was attended by many male, not even one female Sharia scholars over there. I purposely asked the colleagues over there, do you have any female scholar around you? And that question was a bit big question for them because they have sidelined the female Sharia scholar for the last how many decades, if not centuries. And I took the opportunity to tell them, look, even the wife of the Prophet, Aisha radiallahu anha, she is the best mufti. In fact, when the Prophet died, the companion came to see her. Mm-hmm. And the companion was asking so many things about the religion, about the fatwa from her. So it's not right for you not to bring in or to exclude the female scholars in Pakistan. I think I was happy to make that statement because we have to make that statement over and over because fatwa is about ability to give the fatwa on behalf of Allah, and that should include both sexes.
It's genderless, basically.
It's genderless. Mm-hmm. And sometimes women are better because they are more meticulous and perhaps they can see between the line. They can pick up the right meaning of the Quran and Sunnah better than men in some of the cases.
Some of the problems that I had when I was in Islamic finance, sorry, I'm like sounding like a troubleshooter right now.
No issue.
Is that it's very difficult to get the entire board, the entire Sharia board, to sit down at one go. And this is because many of the Sharia board of advisors, they sit on multiple boards, some of them even 20, 30, 50 institutions. Is governance a problem here? How can you contribute when you sit on 50 boards?
Well, as for me, myself, I'm sitting more than, two dozen of boards, not only in Malaysia, but worldwide. It's just about time management. I have been able to attend all the meetings of the world. Of course, some of the meetings I can't because due to some urgent cases. It's about time management. So you have to plan for them properly because otherwise, last minute kind of meeting arrangement will clash with whatever they have, confirmed and they have blocked the diary for that particular meeting.
Yeah, but even board of directors, I'm not talking about Sharia, board of directors, there's a certain limitation to it. The Securities Commission, for instance, puts a limit on the board of companies that you can be held. And that is dealing with, say, earthly matters. It has nothing to do with divine. This is just something to do with divine. Don't you think that there has to be a greater...
Interestingly, Andy, you are highlighting a very common issue being debated. We have chit-chat and during the coffee and tea session, which I mentioned in my book clearly, why Sharia scholars are able to take Sharia board representation. I devoted about 10 pages on that particular topic because this has been a very hot debate everywhere in the world. Board of directors, they are accountable from business decision. Mm. They cannot be sitting in more than one board because they are taking a business decision. A business decision is very much relevant to a bank, to a particular institution, because there's a kind of competition. Whereas the Sharia scholars or mufti, they are not taking any business decision. They are giving the opinion on a particular product. So there's no issue of conflict of interest, if you like, between a fatwa and another fatwa. What is more interesting, which I have articulated in my book, the issue coming to them are the same issue coming to them across the years. Mm-hmm. So they become quick, they become fast. In fact, in my case, I would know the answer before the other presenter
completes his story.
Complete the story, because I can expect already what would be the issue and what would be my Sharia thinking algorithm giving the answer immediately when he is done with the question. In fact, in my case, I would only ask two or three questions and I would know already the answer, what would be the answer by putting three questions to the presenter, to the management of the bank. So by having this experience, we are becoming, I would say in my book, like a super processor kind of fatwa. We know what to say and how to say, and we should be able to give the solution for most of the issue coming our way.
On the breakfast grill this morning is Datuk Dr. Daud Bakar, the founder of Armani Advisors, as well as the author of the newly published book called Sharia Minds in Islamic Finance. Datuk, one of the statements that you made in your book, you say that with the goal of making Islamic finance the preferred option for global citizens. Is this a zero-sum game where Islamic finance is to take over the conventional finance and move away from this dual way of doing finance, conventional Islamic, that we have today?
I think I'm a strong believer that if Islamic finance is good, it's good for everyone. We cannot be limiting the benefit of this finance just to Muslims. Because when the product is good, is clean and pure, then it should be offered to everyone in the society. We have seen in the last 3 decades in Malaysia and 4 decades in the whole world, instant banking products have been able to meet the needs of everyone. In my own word, instant finance has no religion. It can serve Muslim and non-Muslim alike. Taking that logic forward, I would argue that instant banking and finance is now able to replicate and also to make conventional finance irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is very interesting because this is talking about the maturity of the Islamic finance products and services. But there are limitations to Islamic finance when dealing with businesses that are not Sharia compliant. For instance, gambling, for instance, alcohol. Is the inability for Islamic finance to cater to do business with these kind of non-Sharia compliant problems?
True. I mean, if you you have singled out a few sectors just now, you can go on to another 7 sectors, make them 10 sectors altogether. But in Malaysia, for example, the banking products or the banking market share dealing with these sectors are not that many, to be honest. I mean, how many companies are dealing with gambling and the casino and the liquor and hardcore entertainment and what have you. The rest are Sharia compliant manufacturing, services industry, tourism, you know, project financing, power plant, and infrastructure. So this project naturally are compliant already. So we need to plug in the Sharia compliant financing to help them to get the financing. And for the depositor, when they put the money in the bank, they got the same thing that the conventional finance or banking is able to give them, the same return. So there's no arbitrage, if you like, between the Islamic deposit and the conventional deposit. So I would say the time has come, in fact, for the stakeholders in Malaysia to look into a market share which is more than 30%, 40%. Mm. Why can't we make it at least 51%.
Yeah, at least a little bit more, the majority of that.
To give the boost and the confidence to the other shareholders and stakeholders globally to come and invest more in Malaysia, because they can see the market share is growing more than 50% in Malaysia.
There is a promotional body within Bank Negara called the MIFC. There's also many others, from the international, from AUFI all the way to IBIM. And all the alphabets come out, right?
Yes.
And yet we're not 51%. Any reason why there is this glass barrier that we can't simply just break?
There should be some reason. From the economic perspective, there shouldn't be any reason, because you take the trade financing, you take credit card, you take the consumer financing, the car, the house and the equipment, we can make them Sharia compliant and the cost of fund will be the same. So why shouldn't we make our market share more than 50%? Why stop us? There should be some policy consideration. Perhaps some bank, they are not keen purposely to allow the instant banking asset to go beyond 50% of their own group market share at the consolidated group. So this is something that we have to address, because it doesn't matter whether the market share that they have coming from Islamic or conventional, because they are the same shareholder. The dividend, ROE will come to the same shareholder at the end of the day. They talk about cannibalization, one of the issues perhaps you have heard in the market. This is something that we have to understand and try to dilute the very meaning of cannibalization. There could be cannibalization in the mind, but not in the real practice, because the real practice is about bottom line. If I put $1 as capital in my bank and that $1 can bring me 50 cents as a dividend or 40 cents, it doesn't matter whether it comes from Islamic or conventional, because I can enjoy 40 cents dividend out of my $1 investment. So it's good. Perhaps you can have more than 40 cents if you put more emphasis on say banking and finance. You can have partner from overseas, syndicated murabaha, syndicated ijara, syndicated and what have you, to have more wider kind of investor and audience. So this is, again, on paper, it looks doable, but I'm not that clear why it cannot be done
in practice.
In practice.
Mm-hmm. This is very puzzling as well on my end.
Yeah.
Dato, you were saying that Islamic finance can bridge plenty of the needs of the population. And taking this discussion to the 21st century, cryptocurrency is now the talk of the day. And early on, when the fiqh was laid down, muamalat was laid down, there were ribawi items where you can basically use them as currencies: gold, silver, wheat, barley, dates, and so on. Do you think that Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are Sharia compliant? If not, is there a way to make them applicable in Islamic finance?
I think the issue of currency is not the raw material or the form of the currency, whether it is gold or silver or, if you like, Bitcoin, or even in the scholar's language, the skin of the animal.
Mm.
Okay, they tend to cut the skin into pieces and they put the stamp on the skin. It's about when it has become a currency or medium of exchange, you have to follow the Sharia requirement of hand-to-hand spot delivery. You cannot have any premium on anything to do with currency. So if you can follow the hand-to-hand, or perhaps no premium on the loan giving out, then you are okay with that. It doesn't matter the form. In fact, in the future, we shouldn't have any form altogether. It's more of virtual currency. Virtual currency is much more extreme than Bitcoin.
That's true.
So it doesn't matter whether it had the form or otherwise. It's about the respect to the ability or opportunity to take advantage from the loaning activities. The lender cannot take advantage on the borrower because he has the upper hand on the borrower. He can only earn some money on his currency by taking the risk, by buying and selling, or by taking some equity ownership in the company and what have you. But by simply lending out the money and expect the money to come back, either coin or otherwise, with some extra, this is what we call interest or riba in Sharia perspective. We cannot allow that under Sharia because it gives you the unfair advantage on the borrower.
And this topic is a rather interesting one, between the split of the Sunnah wal Jama'ah, or Sunni, versus Shia.
Yes.
Right now, Iran is set to join the global economy again once the sanctions, in fact, the sanctions have been lifted. Is there...
In January next year.
In January next year. So with this anticipation... Is Iran and the way we do Islamic finance today, which is very much positive towards Ahlus Sunnah wal Jama'ah, is there a space for consolidation between how they do Islamic finance versus how the rest of the world does Islamic finance?
Yeah, when I was sitting on IOFI Sharia board for about 10 years, so we have one rep from Iran. In fact, top scholar of Iran. He was a member of our Sharia board of IOFI, and we have discussed on Muraba, Ijara, and what have you. It seemed to me they have the same, to some extent, the same ruling when it comes to this contract of Sharia, Murabaha, Ijara, and what have you. But however, the banking system, this is in the book of the fiqh, book of Islamic law in Iran, according to the Shi'i understanding. The problem is in the banking fatwa. The concept of banking in Iran is a bit different from us. They don't have murabaha, they don't have ijara, they don't have markup sale and leasing, because they thought that money can be loaned out and you can charge a fee on loaning out the money. They don't call it a riba, they call it a fee, or a ju'lu in the Arabic term. I think the great scholar of Iranian by the name of Baqir Sadir, in his book Kitabuna or Iqtisaduna, he mentioned that there's no harm for you to charge a fee for giving out the loan. This fee is not equivalent, not deemed to be riba or interest. So this is something they have to change if they want to come to the mainstream Islamic finance of the whole world. So they have to change this fatwa, because I don't think the Sunni scholars from...
will ever see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, I mean, this is something fundamental. Otherwise, there's no need to build up the whole infrastructure of Murabaha or Tawaruk or money market on the Sukuk, because you can simply use money for money transaction.
Yeah, exactly.
So they have to change the fatwa on the banking structure rather than the fatwa on the fiqh, on the Islamic law, which they have put in their books for the last how many years and centuries.
The way I see this is, okay, yes, true, the change could be very fundamental towards how the Shi'i thinks, But there is a solution to this, I suppose.
There should be some solution, and the market in Iran is quite big. The infrastructure has been neglected for many, I don't know, centuries
yeah.
if you like.
Yeah.
And so they need to build up new hospital, power plant, and all the LRT, MRT, highways. So it's a good opportunity. Hopefully that can bring back the good relationship, business first before religion.
Dato', the book is out. Where can we get the book, Sharia Minds?
The book is available at MPH and other bookshop like Kunikuniya and the other bookshop in Malaysia. Also from Amazon, if you like, and from our Sharia Minds website in our company
and,
in Oman here.
And in your opinion, who would benefit most from reading this book?
I think the book is for everyone because the book is about motivation as well, to challenge your way of thinking. The book is not about the fatwa, it's not about the Sharia ruling, it's about how you deal with the issues and, you know, problem in life. You have to put some thought process. And I'm bringing the Sharia thinking process in dealing with the issue of taxation, the people, the products, media, bad reputation of scholars and everything. So the book is about motivation. It's about trying to be human, if you like, at the end of the day.
Thank you, Dato', for being on The Grill. I have been speaking to Dato' Dr. Muhammad Daud Bakar, the founder of Amani Advisors, as well as the author of the newly minted published book, Sharia Minds in Islamic Finance.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Assalamualaikum, Dato'. This is BFM and I am Ibrahim Sani.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.